Thank you. We're House Resources is called to order. In attendance here in Juneau, we have Representative Seaton, Samuels, and Ramirez. Online, we have Representative Ledoux and Elkins, and we've also joined by Representative Guerra, I believe, in Anchorage. Today, we're going to conduct public testimony on House Bill 488, the Governor's DPT oil tax reform bill that we've been at for two or three weeks now. We will be here, it's 12:35 right now, and as people start to trickle in away from the lunch hours in their businesses and their real lives, we'll be here for a couple hours. There's not a lot of people online right now, but we'll at least keep this up till 2:30 or 3 o'clock so we can get people as they come in at various times to make sure that everybody gets their say in from the public. And with that, we'd like to begin by going to Anchorage to Eric Dompeling. Are you with us, Eric?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for taking the time to testify, and you can go right ahead.
My pleasure. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on House Bill 488. My name is Eric Dompeling. I reside at 520 Mary Circle here in Anchorage. As an individual who's employed in Alaska's oil and gas industry, I know firsthand the critical role that continued investment in Alaska oil and gas exploration play in sustaining our business. As an Alaskan, I also know the critical role that this industry plays in the future of our state and its economy. The tax credits and annual allowance contained in this bill are encouraging, and I believe they will achieve their goal of continued investment and development of the current fields under production and in stimulating investments to find additional oil and gas resources by both the current investors and new companies who are exploring in Alaska. I'm encouraged that this legislation could represent a necessary and critical step toward providing the fiscal stability and predictability companies will need in order to build a multi-million-dollar gas project. However, I am concerned about the prospect of a significant tax increase on an industry that already provides roughly 90% of Alaska's state revenues. I'm concerned that it will have a negative impact on Alaska's ability to attract additional future investment. The oil industry is highly competitive on a global basis. It was not that long ago that the state's economy suffered from the swings in oil prices, a down cycle that I've struggled through personally, and I have no doubt is a cycle that will be repeated in the future. So as you consider how to ensure that Alaska gets its fair share of the profits from oil and gas production, which effectively means growing the size of state government, I urge you to also consider what effect this legislation will have on growing Alaska's economy and on getting Alaskans, getting our fair share of the private sector jobs and business opportunities that will only come through new oil and gas investments. Thank you for your time and commitment to getting this legislation right for all of us.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Dompeling? Anybody that has written testimony, you can either fax it to me at 465-3810 or email it to me, and I will distribute it to all of the members. And my email address you can find on the web under Representative Ralph Samuels. Or you can, if you're an LIO, you can give it to them, and they will get it to all of the members also. So next up in Anchorage, we have Lynn Johnson. Are you with us, Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. I'm Lynn Johnson, 32-year Alaska resident and president and co-founder of Dallin Bach Corporation, a 31-year-old Alaska manufacturing and specialty design and fabrication firm. I'm a past president of the Alaska Support Industry Alliance and the Anchorage International Rotary Club. As a small business owner, I urge the legislators in Juneau to consider the ramifications of any additional tweaking of the PPT that is now before you. As it has been stated many times before, with current prices of oil and throughput, the additional revenue to the state of Alaska and its people is very close to $1 billion. As stated, that is additional tax above and beyond the current take to the state of Alaska and its citizens. Through these discussions, I have heard no mention of the yield or the take to the state and its citizens and businesses from actually encouraging additional investment in our state. This encouragement and placing of incentives is possible if we keep our rate of taxation competitive with other oil-producing areas of the world. The oil producers will react to these incentives with the additional investment of billions of dollars over the next 30 to 40 years.
Can you cover that?
These are additional revenues to employees and businesses like mine and many others. keep in mind that employees of firms working for firms spend money throughout all sectors of the economy, as well as pay property taxes, buy groceries, automobiles, and send their kids to college. The PPT, as proposed, increases the effective tax rate on the industry to between 14.5% and 15%. The risk of raising that rate even higher is that the industry goose that lays the golden eggs just might fly away. Like it or not, as they say on television in Alaska, we are all in the oil industry. Let's keep it that way for the next 50 years. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Johnson? Okay, thank you for coming out today, Mr. Johnson. We've also been joined by Representative Gratula here in Juneau. Next up in Anchorage, we have Mark Hyland.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Hyland, and most importantly, I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I'm also the president of Kikivik Asset Management. Kikivik provides inspection and engineering services to the oil and gas industry and is a subsidiary of Bristol Bay Native Corporation, and we employ nearly 200 employees. 100% of our revenues are derived from the oil and gas industry in Alaska. This includes the major producers, the smaller independents, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, as well as the Cook Inlet refiners and producers. Growing up in Alaska, it is obvious the influence the oil and gas industry has on our state. In the previous 10 years, I've been actively involved in the industry. We have seen significant reduction in oil production. We've seen oil prices that range from $8 to $65 a barrel, and an ever-increasing need to be efficient and competitive as contractors. Through the years, there has been a significant improvement in health and safety and technology, such as directional drilling, which minimizes the impacts on the environment. The oil companies have been respectful of Alaskans' concerns, and I believe it's time we show them the same respect. This bill increases taxes. There is a tremendous amount of new jobs that have been created in the oil and gas industry this last year, and I'm very concerned how the impact of new taxes may affect Alaskan jobs in the future. We all would like to see a gas pipeline be built. I was too young to remember when TAPS was built, but the prosperity it brought to many families is unquestionable. This new tax, in its current state, is the first step in getting there. The oil and gas industry already funds 90% of state government. As an Alaskan, I am disappointed in the ability of our state to create a long-term fiscal plan. What would adding more money to the state treasury truly achieve? My concern that is in an effort to get the state's fair share, the citizens of Alaska will lose out on our fair share of jobs. I support the bill in its current state because it is a stepping stone towards providing the fiscal stability and predictability needed for investors to build a multi-billion-dollar gas project. But I encourage you to consider the ramifications changing the bill this could have on future jobs for Alaskans. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hyland, for joining us. I'd like to compliment you on the comments on a long-term fiscal plan. As if we implement something, and I think that something is going to pass this session probably on oil tax reform, which will probably increase the amount of money the state has access to. I think the timing for a long-term fiscal plan is when we don't need the money. It would be the perfect opportunity to actually start looking at how we're going to handle things at a wide range of prices, including $20 a barrel, when under any system we're underwater.
Absolutely.
So I compliment you, and I would encourage you, as you speak to groups or to your employees or whatever, to encourage them to think along the same way as they can encourage the legislature to think the same way. It's now is the time. We have a perfect opportunity to set something without having the pressure of needing the money right away, to say at various price levels of hydrocarbons that we can pay our bills and without damaging the economy. So thank you very much for your comments. I sure appreciate them.
Thank you.
Next in Anchorage, we have Dave Hagen. Are you with us, Mr. Hagen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Hagen. I am a vice president with Linden, located here in Anchorage at 64141 South Air Park Place. And I welcome the opportunity to testify today in support of HB 488. Linden is a transportation and logistics company that has operations throughout Alaska. Linden knows the importance of fair taxes and their relationship to investment decisions. I am testifying today in support of the administration's proposed petroleum production tax, PPT. Linden specifically supports the 20% tax rate as an important part of the PPT. At this 20% rate, the new tax will raise over $1 billion in new revenue, and it will double the severance tax revenues overnight. It is easy to second guess and criticize any tax proposal. We at Linden believe that the administration has done a thorough job of considering the revenue, future development, and other long-term effects on Alaska. and that the administration's proposal has done an excellent job of balancing these considerations. It is our understanding that the major producers and most of the independent oil companies are in general support of the PPT in spite of the financial repercussions of the increase in severance taxes. We need to keep in mind that the final objective we are all striving for is a gas pipeline project that will require an investment in excess of $20 billion. But it's also important to keep in mind that the investment required to produce undeveloped resources will require an additional $100 billion beyond the pipeline investment. We need to keep the focus on the investment requirement and not on the debate concerning the percentage of severance taxes. All of these investments will be very significant for the future of Alaska and will certainly impact Linden's businesses as well. Linden is also very concerned about the lack of a state fiscal plan for managing surpluses in high-price environments like we're currently experiencing and for balancing the budget when prices are low. The state budget was slightly more than $2 billion 2 years ago. It's expected to go as high as $3.8 billion in another 2 years. And the state is already projecting a $1.2 billion surplus for the current fiscal year. As I stated in my opening remarks, if the PPT is enacted, it will generate an additional $1 billion in state revenues on top of the projected surplus. The state of Alaska needs to be very careful in the determination of the right strategy to ensure a long-term healthy economy. High oil prices have hidden the impact of decreasing oil production from Alaska's North Slope. The state of Alaska can best meet its financial objectives and obligations over the long term by encouraging large investments in new and expanded production and the construction of a gas pipeline. Again, Linden will go on record as supporting the PPT as done by the administration so far. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Hagen? And once again, for all of the folks that are in Anchorage just testified, if you have written comments that you want to submit for the record, feel free to give them to the LIO there or to email them to myself or fax them 465-3810. We're going to move now to Fairbanks, to Randy Brand. Are you with us, Mr. Brand?
Yes, I am. Hi, thank you for allowing me this opportunity. My name is Randy Brand. I reside at 940 Farmers Loop here in Fairbanks. I am here on behalf of myself, my company, Great Northwest Inc., and the Oil Support Industry Alliance. One of the concerns that I've been made aware of is that if this change for this tax is what is necessary to get our gas to market, so be it. We, however, ask that caution is applied to developing the amount of the change. Any tax increase can be a disincentive to investment. $1 billion or whatever the amount is a lot of money for the projected increase in state revenues at current prices. What are we going to do with this money? With a $1.2 billion surplus projected now, are we just building a hungry elephant? How will we get by when prices are low or when the petroleum is gone? And most importantly, will we be implementing our impacting our competitiveness by pricing ourselves out of the market? And that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Brand? Well, thank you for taking your time today. Next in Fairbanks, we have George Berry.
Good afternoon. My name is George Berry. I reside in Goldstream Valley here in Fairbanks. I want to thank you for the opportunity to give this public input to help you folks make the decisions you have to make for all of us. I'd like to premise my comments today by suggesting you keep a specific mindset as you work through this rewrite of our oil tax legislation. This is the most, in my opinion, this is the most important tax legislation since statehood. In that mindset, I encourage you to take a similar tack as our 55 constitutional delegates did some 50 years ago, and to look for what's best for Alaska overall. To consider the oil tax legislation by itself and not allow the governor and the producer's sway your commitment to uphold our state constitution as it applies to the natural resources that must be managed for the maximum benefit of all our peoples. If you have not already seen the Alaska One KUAC production, The 49th Star, Creating Alaska, I encourage you to view it. This documentary can help you feel the energy that these 55 Alaskans brought to the table to do what was best for all Alaskans and not just one segment of our state. I'm working on getting a couple of copies of this and to forward down to the chairman of this committee if you haven't had the opportunity to see it. Specific proposals before you in House Bill 488, my comments would be the 25-20 is a better approach as a percent of taxation that was recently presented to you by Mr. Daniel Johnston here a few days ago. Additionally, exemptions, credits, deductions keep to the absolute minimum and only those expenses incurred in our state. Farming out of IT departments and engineering work across the globe should not be available as tax deductions here. And what about separate accounting? My neighbor still has his lapel pin, separate accounting now. But after a short stay, this legislation was lobbied away and with what we are trying to fix now. In my opinion, separate accounting gave us a fair tax on the industry. Additionally, always remember our past with the producers is only parallel. We have many items in common, but at the end of the day, the interest of the producers' shareholders should not be above the citizens of our great state. Remember also, we own the resource. You can bargain from a position of strength if you so decide to do so. The people of this state will support you on this issue. Heck, we lost 5% by one phone call in one afternoon. I hope the governor lets the answering machine take the next call. Finally, my words of wisdom, having worked in this industry for almost 30 years, it can be a sound relationship with the producers, but you must bargain with them from a position of strength. We own the resource. With all the carrots we can offer and that they want, you must have a stick to approach the balance. A parting question to you all. Will you be remembered as the legislature that buckled to the governor in the secret negotiations on the gas line, or the one that stood tall with the support of the fellow Alaskans to protect our common interests on our natural resources as our state constitution mandates? I hope you continue to support the legislation, continue to separate the legislation from the secret deal the administration has prepared and to deal with it for what it is, oil tax legislation. And one last pitch, if you haven't seen the documentary film, The 49th Star, Creating Alaska, I encourage you to do so. Thank you again for this opportunity.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berry. Representative Rammers had a question for you.
Hi, Mr. Berry, how's it going today? How's Fairbanks?
Good, Jay, it's only 12 below.
Nice, nice. George, why 25-20? I assume that you've seen Daniel Johnston or you read some of the articles. Why 25-20?
Because I think it's a fairer tax. My own personal opinion would be if I were in your shoes, I'd be pushing for 30% and negotiate down.
Why? What's driving you?
Some of the information I've seen over the years having worked in the industry, when you look at the overall taxation burden on the industry here in our state, we're at the bottom of the barrel in many regards when it comes to an oil-producing region of this globe. That's why I think we need a fairer take of the profit margins that are coming out of the oil industry in the state of Alaska. And I'm not against the credits and some of the other incentives that are built into this legislation. That's good and healthy. But in my opinion, at least a 25% on this current version of taxation is most appropriate.
All right, Mr. Chairman, thank you, George. I appreciate your remarks, and of course, you know we're trying to balance a lot of things here, and to stay competitive and to make sure that Alaska is still a viable place to come get that last barrel of oil, not just the next barrel of oil.
I appreciate your comments, Jay. I think we can accommodate both those issues with just a little bit higher tax.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks, George. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next in Fairbanks, we've also been joined in Bethel by Representative Kapsner. Next in Fairbanks, we have Merrick Pierce.
Good afternoon. I am encouraged that you have resisted the administration's and industry's desire to fast-track this legislation. Taking the time to delve into the intricacies of revising oil production taxes, it is apparent that many of you see the myriad problems with Governor Murkowski's bill. I encourage you to continue to take your time with this and continue to get the public involved. It's clear to me that the public interest is growing. I hear it on a daily basis. And you're likely to get lots of input from a lot of really bright Alaskans on this issue. I think Murkowski's legislation is a disaster. We need to scrap it and start over. This legislation looks like it was written or at least influenced by those who view Alaska as a simple colony to be raped and pillaged. Here are some of my many concerns. First, it's not progressive. Where in the legislation is the likely prospect of significantly higher oil prices addressed? We must address all eventualities we might experience in the long term. If oil goes to $100 a barrel or more, Alaskans will pay $3, $4 a gallon for gasoline and heating oil and suffer real economic deprivation, as oil companies will be enjoying windfall profits, as they are now with $60 a barrel oil. And yet, this legislation has no progressivity built into it. That's not acceptable. I think the effective date is wrong. Even the industry partisans have acknowledged that we've lost billions by not revising oil tax structures years ago. So when you have the option of either a January 1st or a July 1st effective date, why should we deliberately lose additional hundreds of billions by going with a July 1st date? I think this just adds insult to injury. The third thing that concerns me, and this really is a big concern, this legislation is highly complex. I'd like to see some alternative methods of taxation presented with an emphasis on simplicity. I think Murkowski is unconcerned with how complex oil tax legislation has cost the state hundreds of millions, and Jay, you say billions, in numerous litigation settlements over the last few decades. And any alternative methods of taxation, particularly with regard to tax incentives, should try and address forces that may be at work to manipulate the price of North Slope crude. I'd like to point out to an article in today's Newsminer about antitrust litigation between the Port Authority, BP, and Exxon. It reads in part, I'm quoting from the Newsminer, "Of course, they're going to file a motion to dismiss," Whitaker said, adding he thought the request did not deal with the lawsuit's allegations. Among those allegations was that mergers, acquisitions, and agreements helped the two oil companies conspire to restrict development on the North Slope and keep the natural gas at record highs. It also accuses the companies of boycotting the authorities and other groups' proposals to build a gas pipeline, end quote. Now, what if these allegations are true? If there is a conspiracy at work involving natural gas, does it reasonably follow that similar arrangements might be at work with regard to oil production and pricing? If that is the case, would an oil reserves tax be a better method of encouraging oil production over various tax credits? I don't know, but I'd like to see that discussed. I think the effective rates are too low. Daniel Johnson said so, and I'd like to hear more than just Daniel Johnson talking about the United Kingdom's 75% take. Another concern I have is the state losing money with oil below $27 a barrel over existing tax rates. This legislation does not address all future eventualities acceptably. And the insanity doesn't end with all these problems. Governor Murkowski imperiously says that you must pass this so we can get a gas pipeline deal with the majors. But wait, I won't tell you, I won't tell the public what the key details are. You just have to trust me. And this is from a guy who asked us to trust him when he made the decision to appoint a successor to his Senate vacancy. We all know how that turned out. This would be great comedy if this legislation didn't have such profound implications for the people of the state. If this is the deal that Alaska must accept to get a gas pipeline with the majors, then forget it. We don't need it. The better approach is to move forward and pass a gas reserves tax like House Bill 223, because we will then be negotiating not on our knees, but from a position of strength, and separately move forward with the same revisions to oil production taxes that ensure we get maximum benefit on the development of our natural resources as required by the Alaska Constitution. I thank you all very much for your time and all the work that you put in this legislation.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very
much, Mr. Pierce. Are there any questions for Mr. Pierce?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Rammers.
Mr. Pierce, I just got a copy of this oil companies want antitrust suit thrown out, so I'll read this here in a moment. I thank you for your comments, and some of the concerns that you have, I think we are working on right now, and I'm mindful of that. I do think it's a complex piece of legislation, but some of the other issues that you address I think are quite appropriate, and we're mindful of those and working on them.
Okay, thank you. Next in Fairbanks, we have Kim Beck.
Yes, Representative Rammus and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Tim Beck. I live at 3470 Plaque Road, North Pole, Alaska, 99705. I'm here this afternoon speaking for myself. Many of you may have heard I'm also on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. But again, I am speaking for myself today. I'm somewhat concerned by this proposal given the all-time records for oil prices. And the way I see it is oil's only half the equation. Do not pass this legislation without seeing the other piece of the puzzle, which is the gas line contract. I've historically requested how much money has the industry taken out of this state of Alaska compared to their investment. They've continually said that's proprietary information. I repeat, hold fast to the position that all information is received by yourselves before making your educated decision. I'd suggest that the industry is already counting their money. With that, I am open to any questions, and I'm not going to purport to be an expert on this contract. I've not had time to review it, and I probably wouldn't understand most of it if I had. I'd have to have an attorney sit there and explain it to me, as many of you will, I'm sure. So good luck with your endeavors, as I know you'll make the best decision for the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Representative Rammers.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Doing good, Jay. Yourself?
Fine. Thank you. Thank you for coming down to testify as an individual today. I appreciate the difference, and how do you think things are going?
With respect to this the contract per se?
Yeah, we've been
piece of legislation.
Yeah, we've been working on this. I think this is our fourth week, I believe. This is the end of our third week in working with this, and we'll go well into our fourth week just to get it out of resources. Do you feel like we're giving it a good look?
Realistically, Representative Rammus, I think that if this legislation is passed without the gas line being contract being disclosed, you're going to have a lot of people looking for your seat this fall.
Well, I don't know if you could be any more direct than that, but
I can try if you could suggest.
Tim, you know, for me, I've kind of taken the exact opposite tact, which is I want to make sure that this piece of legislation stands on its own.
I don't disagree with that, but the governor has made it very clear that these two pieces of legislation, the contract and this tax change, are integral to one supporting the other. And I don't know about you, but I like to see the whole picture before I approve half of it, because it's not a good situation when, I mean, we've all been there. And I would strongly suggest that you as legislators see this entire proposal and see what it really does, because what you may gain in this oil tax change, you may well lose in your gas line proposal.
Well, Tim, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Tim, I don't work for this governor. I'm working for the people of District 10 and the people across the state of Alaska, and I'll tell you what, this piece of legislation needs to stand on its own. We are sorely in need of a revision of the ELF program, and I have tried to consider this as though there is no gas line, rather than to try to look to see the other piece of the equation. I've addressed this as though it's the only thing that's going to happen, and been dismissive of the fact that we may or may not have a gas line deal this year, but an overhaul of our severance tax, which is sagging and old and not doing what it's designed to do, is the way I've approached this. So you know, so it's just a different way of looking at it. But I assure you, it has has been dismissed by myself and many of our colleagues that that this is connected to a gas line.
Well, I appreciate it, Representative Ramos. And the other thing that I am concerned about is I, too, am concerned that we had an industry that had a private counsel with our governor, and they gained 5% from one afternoon. I'd love to be able to do that when I'm negotiating a contract. That, to me, indicates that somebody got a good deal.
Well, I have seen our borough do that with the governor, to come down here and to express a point of view and to make things clearer. And we've got to be careful not to run the industry out of the state of Alaska by taxing them to the nth degree. I'm not suggesting that where the governor stopped the meter is necessarily the right place, but it's awfully easy to be living on Mount Zeus and being an economist hurling down lightning bolts in a perfect economy. You know, I took Mr. Ranney's econ class over there at Lathrop, and he used to say there is no such thing as a free lunch. And we've got to be very mindful to live in the real world. And the chairman here, he and I, you know, we've been working this thing for 12, 14 hours a day, and given a choice between shooting low and shooting high, and we'd rather shoot low and leave a little bit of the state's money on the table and leave a very healthy, vibrant industry intact. And so I that certainly is going to be the eye that I take to this as we work this thing over in the weekend and take a resource version of this bill into committee and recommend it through our committee to House Finance next.
Mr. Ramos, I applaud you for your efforts, and your language you used there was most appropriate. And that's because I think it's clear to the industry and ourselves that they are indeed working with comparative safety on the North Slope and other fields within this great state of Alaska, and no one is shooting at them. So my suggestion is, if they're not willing to give us a fair price for our product and our natural resources, leave it in the ground and let our kids develop it. I mean, that's not a short-sighted suggestion. It's something that it's a non-renewable resource in many, many lifetimes, and let's not sell ourselves short. We have, like I said, this contract has some strong implications with regard to the proposed gas line contract, and to disconnect those two, I think, would be irresponsible. But thank you so much for your opportunity to testify this afternoon, and I look forward to seeing you when you get home, Jay.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it. And for what it's worth, I meant shooting low to target. I don't want to shoot the oil companies. They are, they are the engine of Alaska. And Tim, you know from being on the assembly, and I think you do a fine job there, and I have a great respect for you, trying to get municipal revenues and the things that we're concerned about for our communities, when we are looking at the state of Alaska's budget, the growth of government in costs that are automatic triggers is so enormous over the next few years that I think that the option saying that we should leave the resource in the ground, which implies that that there's no urgency to try and extract the other hydrocarbons, the gas molecules, from the ground, is just not an approach that we can take. I don't think that this is a case in which we can really posture ourselves belligerent about our resources or prouder about our resource than a Kansas farmer is about his grain. You know, we've got to be mindful that this is a global economy and that we've got to be able to get our hydrocarbons to market, and that 89% of our state economy is derived from hydrocarbon dollars, and that I want to make sure that the next generation and the next generation and the next generation do not have to pay a state income tax or a state sales tax. And so I appreciate your point of view, because I respect you enormously, and I'm just sharing with you, and because we don't have many people to speak, so I'm not trying to be adversarial at all, not in the least. But I do want to share with you that we are all very serious here, working very hard and trying to make the very best decisions, and are focused on it, and are taking great responsibility and how we handle our most valuable resource.
I never meant to impugn you with regard to your sincerity down there, Jay. Like I said, I wouldn't want your job. Your seat's a whole lot hotter than mine is at this point in time. But,
I'm trying to heat yours up.
Pardon? Okay.
Thank you.
And if you need any help with this, just let me know. Give me a call. It's 488-3320.
Okay. I'll call you, Tim.
All right. Have a good afternoon.
You too, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Next, we're going to go back to Anchorage to Mike Coy.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Coy.
I'll be very brief here. As mentioned, my name is Mike Coy. I've worked with BP for over 11 years in various capacities, including numerous business development roles, which include strategy and economic evaluation of gas sales from the North Slope of Alaska, in addition to mergers and acquisitions and finance. I'm currently on a leave of absence and therefore free to speak with all the knowledge and perspective of someone from within the industry, but without any of the associated limitations or constraints. Excuse me. Let me start by saying that most oil companies use fixed prices when making investment decisions, and those prices have tended to be in the $20 to $30 per barrel range. Within this price range is where the tax regime needs to look attractive relative to other places in the world in order to attract investment. What happens outside of this range is important, but largely immaterial when making investment decisions, and this is based on my experience. So this, coupled with the state's objectives, is what's important in determining a tax structure. Now, having said that, and inferring what the state wants to achieve, I believe the basis for the oil tax legislation, House Bill 488, is reasonable. An oil tax that is less aggressive, provides incentive for investment, and is based on profits instead of revenues is a good thing. However, while the premise is okay, the proposed bill misses the mark on several points, which the committee should consider in its deliberations. And these are, very briefly, the tax as it's proposed dramatically increases the risks to the state. This occurs for several reasons, but the most important is that it reduces the aggressive nature of the current tax without sufficiently allowing the state to participate in the upside when oil prices are high. To mitigate this, the legislature should increase slightly the aggressive nature of the tax while implementing a graduated profit tax structure, which increases the state's proportional share of profits as price goes up. Again, as long as the graduated profit tax kicks in at prices high enough not to impact investment decisions, and I would suggest that's over $30 a barrel, the state can and should consider a maximum profit tax that exceeds the proposed 20% rate. Secondly, the 20% tax incentive, again, in and of itself is reasonable. As mentioned, most oil companies use fixed prices to make investment decisions, and providing a tax incentive outside of this investment range is a concession by the state without any offsetting benefit. High oil price itself is incentive enough, and the state should therefore consider tapering off the tax incentive as prices increase. In addition, rather than apply the credit to exploration costs, which again increases the state's risk and in reality makes them a participant in exploration, states should consider allowing a higher tax incentive on viscous oil development, which is a large discovered resource close to existing infrastructure, which means it theoretically could be brought online faster than exploration. Tax phase-in period, the so-called clawback, I think is really a negotiating ploy by the oil companies and should be removed. Any reference to gas taxation should also be removed so that oil tax considerations can be done independently, which leads me on to my final point. The final thing I would like to say is around the relationship of oil fiscal terms and a gas pipeline project. Oil fiscal terms have no bearing whatsoever on the economics of a gas pipeline project. They are not related at all, except through negotiation. The legislature should and must speak to, and no oil tax fiscal terms are included in the gas fiscal contract in order to preserve the sovereign rights of the state in setting oil fiscal terms. So in summary, while I think there are better starting points for amending the state's oil fiscal terms than this bill, if it is to be the basis for a new system, amendments should be made to make it slightly more aggressive on the low side, on the low price side, implement a graduated progressive tax on the high side, consider a tax incentive for viscous oil, and most importantly, consider oil tax legislation separate from a gas pipeline project and ensure oil fiscal terms are not included in a gas contract. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Coy? Okay, thank you, everybody, for taking the time to come out here this afternoon. And right now, I guess, Representative Seaton.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Coy, are you still online?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. When you were talking about that should be slightly more aggressive on the low side or on the base tax rate, were you speaking of the 20% tax rate, and were you looking at any particular number there that your analysis goes, or were you just meaning that we should consider something higher?
What I was saying is that would have a tax basis that isn't necessarily tied as much to oil price. And if you go back to the current structure as it's established, the severance tax, while it's tied to revenues, you can actually set that up where it would have a fixed component. So, for example, you have a minimum severance tax rate of X cents or X dollars per barrel that's in place no matter what oil prices are, and that provides some cover to the state should oil prices go down. And then on the high side, on the upper side, when prices are high, you have a graduated progressive tax system that allows the state to capture more and more of the rent as prices go up proportionally.
So follow up?
Yes, sir.
We had some testimony from our economists that were saying that possibly on the low end, keeping the production tax basis that we have now, like the ELF system, so that on the low end you don't drop off as fast. Is that similar to what you're talking about?
Yeah, and that's what I was suggesting, that there are other bases that I think are more appropriate to start an oil fiscal terms restructuring from, and personally what I would consider is starting from the current structure, applying a minimum severance tax rate, and I suggest 50 cents a barrel, it's just a number, but a minimum severance tax rate, which provides kind of a fixed or lower bound of oil revenues to the state when prices are low. And then on the high side, you start a profits tax, or what's called an excess rent tax or windfall tax. At a certain oil price, this tax kicks in and allows the state to capture more and more rent. And then what you do is you preserve the low side, the state can participate in the high side, and you create a band, and it's in this band that's where the tax structure should look advantage relative to other places, so the state still attracts in investment dollars.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Coy. And right now, I'd like to thank everybody who has come out so far, and we'll take an at ease. And if we get more people in, we will come back on the record. And right now, we're at ease. Jim Sampson. Hi, Jim. How are you? Jim Sampson, are you with us, Mr. Sampson?
Yeah. Hi. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
How are you?
Good, sir. Chairman Samuels. Chairman Ramirez.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. Hey, I just wanted to thank you for the additional hearing. And I had an opportunity to spend some time with both of you here Wednesday, and thought it was important to express my appreciation to you both and members of the committee for your continued work down there. and wish you well as you go forward on this piece of legislation. That's all my testimony today.
Thank you for taking the time out, Mr. Sampson. It was good to see you last week also.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any other questions for Mr. Sampson? Enjoy the rest of your day, Jim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we'll go back on ease, or at ease. From Fairbanks, Jean Haig.
Jane Haig. Hi, Jane.
Hi there. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. I have been following the process of this oil tax/gas line negotiation, And meanwhile, I've been completing a book on Soapy Smith, the famous con man of Skagway. And I've really put a lot of effort into studying this, actually, as I pursue a PhD program in U.S. history. And I would just like to say that this negotiation resembles nothing so much as the famous shell game. I think the gas line is the P. And if you believe that these oil companies have set up this shell game so that you can win in a basically blind negotiation, you know, I think you should go back and study your history of con men, because you can never win this game. And I think what I object to here is not your efforts to review this, but really the process that you've been given by Governor Murkowski and the oil companies. And it just is not fair to try to deliberate on something as serious as the oil taxes that we're going to get from our resources as Alaskans for the next 20, 30, 40 years while we're trying to get a gas line sort of being held over the barrel of, you have to decide without seeing the deal that we're going to give you for the gas line. You have to make the decision for the oil taxes first. I would just urge you not to buy into that deal and to wait for another opportunity to negotiate a gas line in an open process and oil taxes in an open process where the people of the state of Alaska can have some assurance that what we're studying and what we're being offered is a fair deal. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Ramirez.
Hi, Jane. How are you?
Hi. Very good. Thank you, Jane.
Let's exchange literary quips, shall we? I recommend that next on your reading list is 100 Years of Solitude, because if we continue to press this point, that's what Alaska will be experiencing, is 100 Years of Solitude. The objective is to work with the oil companies. This is not a shell game. It's insulting to the whole process to reduce it down to a pea game or chasing a pea in a shell. It is so complex, and I appreciate the levity with which you're trying to approach this, but it's really so serious. Jane?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, I agree with you that it's very serious, and in spite of the fact that I always like to take things with a little joke, I mean, it's the fact that it is so serious, and what I'm arguing, I mean, I just think it needs to be an open process, and I don't see how it can ever be open when you have to decide on the oil tax before you even see the deal with the gas line. And as far as 100 Years of Solitude, I'm impressed that you're so well-read, and I agree that it is a mess. You know, the scene portrayed is a mess, but the fact is that the resources will be there. You know, they're not going away. And, you know, whether we get them in time to build our dream houses or whether the resources are developed for our children, I think it's important for us to get a fair deal.
Jane.
And that's all I think that we want, is a fair deal. And I think that we need to hold out.
Jane, Mr. Drew, we don't have anybody else online for a second, do we? Jane, can we talk for a minute? We had a caucus, you'd probably consider it one of our secret caucuses here a couple of weeks ago when we were going over the budget for some years to come. And there are very many parts of our budget, particularly the health, education, and social services portion of our budget, that are growing automatically at such an enormous rate that you cannot imagine, and they would swamp even our $1.2 billion surplus in the not-too-distant future. And it is, for some people, because it's been ginned up in the press, I think, that this is, and by the governor, that this is, let's do the oil tax before we show you the gas line deal. But I will tell you that from my point of view, as I stated earlier, I'm not sure if you were in the room, so I'll share it again with you. This is a standalone piece of legislation. The ELF system of addressing production or severance is no longer working. We have an opportunity to remedy it. I've been in the legislature for a little while, but I've followed the legislature for a long time, And this is one of the most extraordinary processes I've ever seen. We've practically had a committee of the whole for this is the end of our third week, and we will go well into our fourth week just in the first committee of referral. There have been some meetings where we've had 24 or 25 House members out of 40 sitting crowded in a House finance room or in the Senate finance room or even in the House resources room. And we have been meeting nonstop. The balance of the building has ground nearly to a halt while we have taken on this particular issue. And whether we do or do not get a gas line, this is an opportunity for us to address with great openness how we're going to review the way that we tax the oil companies going forward. And so I just want to make you aware of that, and I think there's going to be ample time to see the gas line deal, and we may or may not get a gas line deal, but we do not enjoy the luxury with declining oil fields of sitting back and waiting until we feel like developing our resources. We need to do this in a partnership capacity with the oil companies. We can't tax them to death, and we can't sit around and wait for a better deal. We need to move forward very deliberately. What do you think?
Well, what I wanted to say was I did not hear you say, I was not in the room when you said that, and I agree with you that this is an amazing opportunity to redo the oil taxes. And as long as, I mean, I agree that we're keeping them separate, if we can keep them separate, but there are these overtones as we do and consider the oil taxes, which I think are important, but there is kind of an overtone of, and it better be something that we like, or we better get the incentive that we like coming from the oil companies that seem to be insinuating themselves into the debate. And I think, in fact, I saw PR ads on TV from the oil companies suggesting that this is part of the debate. And I think that they need to be kept separately, and we need to look at what Alaskans need from the oil tax, regardless of the game playing going on from the oil companies versus the gas line.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Jane, good Shabbos. It's nice to talk to you. Have a good night. Celebrate, I said hello.
Thank you. If we have nobody else, we'll go on at ease again.